We begin in the Middle East, where Secretary of State John Kerry has fallen short on his diplomatic efforts to end the fighting in Gaza. Now he's looking to salvage talks for a temporary ceasefire, and it's keeping the door open to future negotiations for a longer-term solution. The UN, meanwhile, has called for an immediate halt to fighting. But after what was a relatively calm weekend, fighting resumed again today, just as Muslims in Gaza are celebrating the end of Ramadan. Nick Schifrin is the Jerusalem correspondent for Al Jazeera America and is currently covering the conflict in Gaza.
Yeah, in the last couple hours, we've seen the fighting resume in earnest. I would say nothing compared to what we saw a few days ago. We've seen three Israeli airstrikes, two on rocket launchers, one on a rocket factory, and we've seen a handful of rockets flying from Gaza into Israel. But again, right now, compared to what it has been, the fighting is very low because the Israeli officials I'm speaking to say that right now it's a quiet for quiet, fire for fire.
Nick Schifrin, I want to take a step back just for a moment. Listen to the UN Security Council President Eugene Richard Gassana just this morning.
The Security Council emphasizes that civilian and humanitarian facilities, including those of the UN, must be respected and protected, and called on all parties to act consistently with these principles.
That's, of course, in response to UN protection facilities that were hit by Israel. Nick Schifrin, John Kerry has just come from Paris, where he was trying to negotiate a deal, the UN meeting overnight, to try to broker ceasefire agreements. It sounds like events on the ground are largely immune from these more worldwide efforts.
They have been largely immune, and certainly people have hoped that John Kerry and these other diplomats would succeed, but it's clear that they haven't. And the U.S. officials I speak to who are close to Kerry express a frustration with their inability to stop the violence and express a frustration specifically with Israel right now. There was a lot of disappointment among Israeli officials in the draft ceasefire proposal that John Kerry submitted to the Israeli cabinet on Friday night. That draft was unanimously rejected by the cabinet. They felt that it was more of a Hamas document or a document produced by the intermediaries between the U.S. and Hamas, Turkey and Qatar, than it was of an ally of Israel. And as one Israeli official put it this morning, he said, John Kerry is a friend of Israel, but sometimes with friends like these, it would be better to negotiate with enemies. And on the other side, Hamas continues to fire rockets. They don't feel like they can trust U.S. assurances that in the future, any ceasefire will actually include the things that Hamas wants, namely the opening up of the borders of Gaza, which have been closed by both Israel and Egypt, and also a lifting of the Israeli siege. Those things have been promised in the past in previous ceasefires and never actually came true, and Hamas simply doesn't trust what the U.S. or other people are telling them.
Meanwhile, if Israel feels like right now it's with friends like these when they look at John Kerry, Hamas might feel the same way about its old ally in Egypt, because the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt is out, and the new leadership in Egypt, which has a peace proposal on the table, or at least a ceasefire proposal, Hamas doesn't trust that proposal.
No, I think that's absolutely true, and it's important to understand that this war is not only about Hamas and Israel and rockets and tunnels and both people, but it's also about Hamas and Egypt. As you say, Egypt and namely President al-Sisi does not trust Hamas at all, does not like Hamas at all. Most people here believe that Egypt and Israel hate Hamas equally. And so what Hamas, according to analysts here, is trying to do is trying to force Egypt to deal with Hamas, to convince Egypt that it cannot eliminate Hamas, that it has to deal with Hamas, and therefore it has to be in the middle of this kind of diplomacy.
Well, Nick Schifrin, before we let you go, you know, I have to ask, with both sides feeling like their friends don't understand them, what are you hearing from regular Gazans? I mean, do they still have the attitude that we've heard before that as bloody and as horrible as this conflict is, they want to stay in it until they see real dividends, until they see Gaza opened up, they're willing to lose more friends, neighbors, and family members to see a result here?
It's hard to characterize everyone in the same basket, of course. Of course, we have heard over the last few weeks of many Gazans saying, no, stick to the fight. We need to actually get those borders open. We need to lift this siege, and no matter what it takes, we will do that. But to be frank, on a day like today, so this is Eid. This is the end of the holy month of Ramadan, a day that Muslims celebrate as one of their most holy. It's equivalent to our Christmas, basically. They spend time with families. They give the kids gifts, some clothes. And it's a day of celebration, of peace, really. And so on a day like today, when the fighting continues, we were with a couple families in Shujaiya, which is one of the main communities that have been really hammered in the last couple weeks. When we're with them, they are desperate for a ceasefire. They are pleading for a ceasefire. They are emotional and overwhelmed and in fear and in shock on a day when they hoped would be full of holiday cheer. And so, no, these people today who I speak to are more than willing to do whatever it takes to keep their family safe, that being the most important thing for them, and therefore they are pushing for a ceasefire at all costs, despite other people in the past and certainly the political leaders saying, no, we have to hold out.
Nick Schifrin is Jerusalem correspondent for Al Jazeera America and speaks to us from Gaza. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So let's pause for just a second to consider what we just heard about the "with friends like these" attitude in Israel, the deep skepticism expressed by some in Israel regarding the efforts of John Kerry and the United States to act as honest brokers for peace. Well, surely America is Israel's best friend, right? Take this, for example, some language from a Senate resolution passed earlier this month. Here's a quote. The resolution, quote, reaffirms the United States' support for Israel's right to defend its citizens and ensure the survival of the State of Israel, and calls on Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas to dissolve the unity governing arrangement with Hamas and condemn the attacks on Israel, end quote. Results of that vote, 100-0. And how about this number, $280 million? That's the amount of U.S. taxpayer money being folded into any new border deal for that child crisis on the border to go to Israel to support their Iron Dome missile defense system. Could there be a more unequivocal expression of American support for the State of Israel? But the picture across the rest of the country outside of Washington and among American Jews at large is a little different. John Judas is the author of Genesis, Truman, American Jews, and the Origins of the Arab-Israeli Conflict, and a senior editor at The New Republic. Judas says the modern American Jewish relationship with Israel has always been in flux, but he singles out the Six-Day War as the turning point.
What changes is first 1967, the Six-Day War, which first of all creates tremendous fear that Israel is going to be destroyed, and then pride that the Israeli Defense Forces defeated the all these different countries in 6 days. It was just an amazing feat. So fear, pride. Then 1973, the Yom Kippur War, where again there's fear that Israel's going to be overrun. So after those two experiences, you really get a renewed interest in Israel among American Jews. You also get a renewed interest in the Holocaust. That's the era 1977-78. That's when Carter decides to authorize the building of the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. So that builds, and it's even integrated into the religion and its liturgy. So by the 90s, with Clinton and Rabin and Yasser Arafat on the lawn of the White House, you get a tremendous enthusiasm at that point among American Jews for Israel. AIPAC is an enormous force in Washington. Israel's the biggest recipient of American foreign aid. And all things are hunky-dory. And really, as far as American Jews, the erosion starts in the 2000s.
The erosion starts in the 2000s with the latest confrontations between Hamas and Israel, I take it.
That's part of it, but the immediate impact of September 11th was again to galvanize support for Israel as a country that was also under attack from terrorists. But when you get, particularly in the later Bush years, with the disillusionment with American foreign policy, then with early Obama, where Obama tries to do something and is rebuffed by Netanyahu, that's when you begin to see a defection among liberal democratic Jews, when you begin to see splits in Congress, when people begin to speak out who haven't spoken out before.
But also, lots of American Jews seem to be protesting, at least privately among themselves, that they don't want to be identified with what they see as mistaken policies towards Gaza, towards the two-state solution, towards the West Bank for that matter, and that publicly at least, while they support Israel and believe in its right to exist, they don't want to be part of it. They don't want to be tattooed with what they see coming out of Jerusalem.
That might be so. There is an element probably, and I know I feel this, of concern that as a Jew things are happening over there that make me very uncomfortable. But it's hard for me to say how deep and pervasive that feeling is.
Well, John Judas, where do you think this is headed in the next couple of years? You mentioned that support for Israel is strongest among the oldest class of American Jews, those 65 and up, diminishes reliably as the generations get younger. Do we reach a point soon where American Jewish support for Israel overall is truly, truly tepid? Does Israel really care? Are they shopping for new allies, or do they have to start?
Again, to the extent that there's been a fall off in liberal democratic and liberal democratic Jewish support for Israel, there's been a massive increase in Republican support, and especially among evangelicals. And that really takes off after September 11th, and it takes off with the idea that there is this enormous Islamist enemy in the world, and that Israel is one of the stalwarts defending us against this threat. So among American Jews, its influence is a question of salience and who's going to give a lot of money and who's going to try to wield influence. And to a great extent, I think that that's still the middle-aged, older American Jews who very closely identify with Israel, defend whatever it's doing, see it as embattled, and want to contribute to candidates who share that view and defeat ones who don't.
You got a great deal of blowback after writing your book from American Jews, from others, but in particular from Jews and Jewish interests, pushing against you for what you had to say. Any regrets?
Well, I expected that it would happen, but when it happens, it's unpleasant. And I'm not somebody who's made my career writing about Israel or American Jews. I'm mainly been a political reporter and written about American intellectual and political history. So I keep thinking, well, it's all over now, and I'll go on to something else. And then and something like what happened in Gaza occurs, and I find that I have to keep writing about it and talking about it. So I can't say that I have any regrets, but I can't say that it's been a lot of fun either.
There is no part of the current situation between Israel and Gaza that is any fun, but it's good to have you, John Judas, to give your long view and your perspective on what the conflict means for Israel and for American Jews who support them. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.